They think we're lazy.
They think we're weak-willed.
They think we're entitled.
They think we're selfish.
They think we don't care about anybody but ourselves.
We are compassionate.
We are resourceful.
We are capable.
We want to make a difference in the world.
We are underestimated.
Welcome back to another episode of Michigan's Missing Angels with the Underestimated podcast. Today we're doing something a little different. In our first three episodes, we discussed the main case of Kim Larrow, introduced the Cindy Zarzycki case, and dug deeper into the involvement of Arthur Rehm. This episode is a bit different. Instead of us doing the talking, we have a special guest, Emma Ebney, an older woman who has a personal connection to Cindy's case. And before we start this episode, I just want to point out that since we recorded the interview on a laptop, the sound quality isn't the best. We apologize for that, but I'm sure you won't mind after all. The bad sound quality doesn't take away from the details of what we learned.
So our first question for you is, if we were wondering if you could tell us about like how you learned what happened to Cindy and like kind of explain that to us.
Actually, it goes way back. I used to work at Grinnell's McColl Mall in Michigan. My ex-mother-in-law worked at a school in, would be Roseville, I guess. She worked with Cindy Zarzycki's father. They worked together, co-workers. And when she went missing, my mother-in-law knew I was good at finding things and actually asked me if I could look into it and see if I felt anything. And she gave me the picture of the flyer. Well, nothing happened. There was nothing there. And then I woke up from a sound sleep in 2010. And with this nudge to just wide awake, turn on the TV, and I saw the McColl Mall sign. And I'm like, oh, my God, okay, I know that place. Let's watch it. And it was about Cindy, which I didn't know her name until I saw the flyer. And it was like, that's her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's what started it. And then I was kind of connected with Cindy. And one thing led to another. I just couldn't let it go. So I kept checking in on things and contacted. Did you ever talk to Detective Derek McLaughlin by any chance?
I did reach out to him, but he never got back to me.
I hope he's alive and well, because I couldn't track him down either.
Us too.
He's the one that made things happen. And I contacted him, and I had been having dreams about a blue sparkly bracelet. And so I contacted him, and I said, in regard to Cindy, I said, if there's anything to do with a blue sparkly bracelet, can you give me a call back? And he called me right back. And he told me that they did find a box of jewelry in Art Rehm's warehouse.
Yeah.
So, but he never told me if it was a blue sparkly bracelet in there. And I don't know if you want me to go into how I actually do it, or you just want the logical part, like the police want.
We want all of it.
Yeah, all of it.
If anything, you're okay sharing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what happened is after I woke up in the middle of the night, and I felt this pull then from Cindy. And I said, okay, if you want me to go to the police, I don't know what I can do, but if you want me to go to the police, show me where you're buried. Which I found out later, she's buried up north somewhere, so there was no way I was ever going to find her. But I was driving down the road, and it went from a feeling of her being in the car to all of a sudden I smelled the strongest cologne I ever smelled. Like, oh my God, almost knocked me over in the car. And I thought it reminded me of high karate. And it was like around 10 Mile and Gratiot, I believe it was. And I thought, okay, the energy in the car just changed. So I was driving and I thought, this is ridiculous. I'm looking for a needle in the haystack. I'm just going to go home. And so I went to turn around and there was traffic and I decided to go the other way. Well, I ended up turning down a road behind, Sacred Heart Church. And that's where Scott Rehm was buried. I found Scott Rehm's grave without knowing it. And when I called the detective and talked to him, and I was telling him what happened, and I said, well, I couldn't find Cindy. I says, I found this tree, and it had this dragon with little bells hanging down from it, and there was a little birdhouse. And he says, you want to go for a drive? And we went for a drive, and I thought I was telling him how to turn, but he was already doing it. Turned out he knew exactly what I was talking about because he pulled up, and there was just a little round thing there in the ground that said Scott Rehm on it. And he said, you found Scott. So he said, you wouldn't have found Cindy unless you went for a long drive up north. So that's how I got involved in the whole thing to begin with, was with Detective McLaughlin. And I don't know if you read articles about it or not, but when it happened, he told reporters that when they found Cindy, they didn't pull out a bone. He saw Cindy like she was in that flyer, and he saw her leave the grave and go up in the sky. So therefore, he no longer considered me crazy. But unfortunately, his boss told him, let it go. And I didn't know that. So he retired and dropped it. And I had sent him, you know, the map that I gave you, that copy of the map with all the pictures and stuff. And I thought, well, I guess maybe he decided I'm a flake after all, because I never heard anything. And it wasn't until years later I found out he had retired because I told him to drop it. He found his killer and that was it. And if you saw the, I don't know if it's still out there, if you saw the interview with Derek McLaughlin when he was interviewing with Art Rehm, and Art Rehm was holding the map, and he was holding the map in his hand, and he says, I've told you everything, because I don't believe in lying, because it'll come back at you. And he was holding the map. He don't believe in lying, it'll come back to you, but I guess, you know, changing the truth and all that is a different story. So we went in circles. I called... it was in 2018, I believe. I called Detective Tredesky. I just woke up in the middle of the night, and it's like, they wouldn't let me go. And I felt it was Kimberly King who would not let me go. And I called Detective Tredesky because he was the one handling that case. And he says, well, it's really weird that you call. He said, because yesterday we were visiting Art Rehm, and he drew a second map. And then he kind of got frustrated, and he said, well, why don't you just call that woman that Mac was so excited about? Why don't you just call and ask her? So it was weird that, you know, I called the very next day. So he got all excited, and he sent me his map. Well, this map that Art Rehm drew, Mac asked for a map and gave him like a month to draw it. That's why he had all the time in the world to put all the doodles on them. Where when Tredesky was there, this is the map that Art Rehm drew. That was it. And Tredesky told me that when he drew it, he put a line here and an X, and he said, that's where Cindy is. And that was it. Six boxes. I found the six boxes. They're floor tiles. He had them buried in a field. He had the graves marked with floor tiles. I had over the years, because Tredesky was like, they dug up the trees, because I'd heard the three trees, look at the trees, when I went out there. Just kept going through my head, look at the trees, look at the trees. And I spent, so I can understand why the police didn't see it, I spent an entire week staring at this map, putting it into Microsoft Paint, enlarging it, and going, what is it? And then when I blew it up, the one I sent you had all the different things showing little bodies in the trees and all that.
Yes.
So the logical thought was that the other girls were buried those three trees. And I went out there with the police. And a couple times they were in the wrong spot. I kept saying, this isn't the spot. And, you know, well, Detective McLaughlin said, this is it. And I said, no, it's not it. And next day I'm back out again because, yeah, somebody else came out and said it wasn't the right spot. We finally found the right spot. We found the trees. I stepped in a big old hole. And I just started laughing. I could have broke my leg, I guess, but I just burst out laughing. And I said, this is where Cindy was, this spot, but I'm not feeling anything. I don't feel like it's a graveyard. Well, all of a sudden, one of the police officers said, I've got, like, what do you call it? Depression, like the ground was sunk in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, they found three places where it was sunk in. So end the case, send me home, and they go and dig up. And I'm like, I don't feel that's it. That's where they didn't find anything. I don't know if it was a year or two later that I was in contact with him again and with his map. And let's see. Because I've talked to so many people. It was his map, and I looked on there, and there was an area alongside another field, and there were trees that looked like three trees, and there was a little curve in the river, which looked like his drawing, and then there was this other little thing, and where he said, you know, Cindy. So I said, I think that's it. Police, you got to give logic. You can't say, I want to go here. You know, it's private property. So I said, I want to look at this. So I came from Wisconsin to Michigan, and I went out there expecting to walk and see if I feel anything and keep walking. Logs to climb over. It was just insane. It was like almost broke my neck. I don't know how many times. And I got out there. I didn't feel anything. And here there was duct tape and, I mean, police tape and everything all over the place. He had already had, I think it's called Necroscience or something out of maybe Texas that came out, and they marked plant people and all this, marked all kinds of stuff. I don't feel anything. So I finally started walking like I headed in the direction like I felt drawn to. And, well, I started walking, and there was a giant spider web right in front of my face. And I'm like, oh, God, okay, I don't belong here. I can tell that. I turned around, and here's this tree with a single blade of a spider web hanging down with a little skinny branch about that big blowing in the wind, and there wasn't any wind. So I walked over there, and I stood there. And I said, okay, there's something here. So he marked that place. Then I walked a little farther. I found another one. He marked that place. And then what I didn't know was there was a big storm coming. But he says, we've got to leave now. And I go, but I'm not done. I said, this is something, but I don't feel it remains. I need to keep going. And he says, well, we're done. And he turned around and he said, next time we come back, we're digging. And I'm like, well, how can you dig if I haven't found anything
already?
Yeah.
You know, but all those other people did, so I can't say anything. You know, they've got their skills. And we were leaving, and the weeds, there were stick weeds. I don't know if you know what those are. They got little thorns in them, and they're just like sticks.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
All of a sudden, they're grabbing my legs. And the only way they'd let go is if I step back. And I did it three times. And so I finally, that's it. I step back. And I walked over this spot, and Detective just come back like, hey, Mom, we got to go. And I said, there's something here. So he marked it. Well, they went out there. They dug for an entire week. And on the last day, they dug the three places that I showed him. But I told him I didn't feel it was remains. And I felt Kimberly King was showing me the one. I said, but I don't feel like it's remains. I've never gone out and found out in the open. You know, I go and I can find a cemetery and go in front and see the headstone and know I found them. Here, you can't do that. And on the last afternoon, they went out there and they dug those three places. And he told me they found very probable evidence. Now, you would think if they found very probable evidence, they would have called and told me, come on back and finish the job. Because I told them they want me to go that way. And no. So anyways, I finally got permission. And he got mad at me because every time I went out there, I wasn't in the right spot. And I said, okay, I'm here. Where are you? And he goes, well, you're in the wrong place. Lord knew I was in the right place. Because the place where I was at three times is where you actually had to go to get to where they're at. And it's a field. It's off North Avenue, but it's 22-23 mile road. And it's a subdivision, and you go to Cranberry Creek Drive Road. I think it's Drive, Cranberry Creek Drive, dead ends at a field behind the subdivision, and you walk to the left, and you walk, and right there, I stopped, and I prayed, because I felt like, oh, this is stupid, I'm not feeling anything, and, you know, maybe I'm just wacko or something, you know, so I stopped, and I had my back to that field, and I prayed, and all of a sudden, I felt like, I know where they're at, and I turned, and I walked. And I walked right smack dab into something, stubbed my toe and almost fell. Turned out it was a floor tile, the exact same color of the dirt. And that one section of the field had never been dug up. It had wildflowers growing in it. He raised bees. So they probably had bees and he had flowers. Stubbed my toe on it. And I looked down and it's like there was something black. And that's when I realized it wasn't dirt. And I was told afterwards that the old floor tiles were asphalt and the bottom of the tiles were black. It was a black on the bottom and it was a floor tile. So I'm like, oh my God, I found him. The squares on his map, I found him. And I went and I started walking. I went back out to like the edge of that field where the flowers were and started walking and maybe about 6 to 8 feet, something like that. Five little yellow butterflies flew in front of my face. And I'm like, okay, I'll take that as a sign. So I turned and I walked and I watched them. And they flew into that field and down into a hole. And the hole was under another tile.
Oh, wow.
So I found them. But by the time the police got out there, that it had time to come out. I think that was Detective Tillis. I believe that was Detective Tillis West Bloomfield, if I'm not mistaken. Don't quote me on that. I got diaries. I can look it up if you need that information. But by the time he came out there, I was back in Michigan, long gone. My son went out there and he said, oh, Mom, he said, you won't believe it. It has grown up all weeds and everything so much. He says, I have no idea. I can't find anything. It's just a mess out here. So they couldn't find it and didn't dawn on anybody, maybe mow the grass, but you know, so that didn't work. And then the next time I got out there was, I believe that was when Detective Robinson went out with me and we got out there and I was like, oh my God, there was a plow truck, whatever you call it, tractor with a plow on it, had just plowed that section up. It had never been touched because those tiles were so old and all of a sudden it was all plowed up. So he can't get his boss to let him go out there and my health is going downhill, but I would go out there in a heartbeat if he called and said, come and walk it again. But so I'll show you this map that we misinterpreted because when I went out there, this here is the angle the tiles were going, one here, one in here, which put that design. Here's the three X's he drew. That's the three trees. And he drew this line just haphazard, and he told Detective Trudowski, I don't know, you probably can't see it. You see it?
Now we can.
Yeah, now we can.
Yeah. And he told Detective Trudowski that this line here was Cindy, which Cindy was by the three trees. And I've tried to figure out what this is, and I looked it up. This little image here. The little image.
Yes.
Okay, yeah.
Right there. Mm-hmm.
If you look that up, that's what a cranberry tree bud looks like. Cranberry Creek Road. So everything he did was little games. And his map, and I went to psychics, like, you know, help me out. I'm going to lose my mind. They would look at the map, and the very first thing they would say is, the field's not right. He's messing with you. And what happened, and I don't know if you can get at this anymore now. I don't know if you were able to go to Google Earth Pro.
Yeah.
1985. Were you able to do that? To do the history?
Did you try? I did try, but it was, like, very, like, it was, like, kind of awkward to look at, like, almost. I don't know if that's the right word.
They took it off. It's like it's not there now. They made it something else, and I don't know if you can go back to 1985 on that to see it. I haven't tried. But this is what it was, his map, but the field goes this way. And the picture of the field is almost identical to the picture of the field in 1985.
Wow.
And on his map, he put, I should have told you guys, have your copy there so you could see it. He put west and north and south very specifically. He didn't put east because that would have been a lie, because this field was going in a different direction. So I don't know. I have tried. I have talked to so many police, and I'm thinking that when it's missing persons cases, they give it to the ones who are getting ready to retire and just sit back and leave. Because I've talked to more police who, when I call back, oh, I'm retiring, I'll give it over to somebody else. So as far as Art Ream goes, when he was holding that map, I knew he was lying. And he, in his mind, he was telling himself, he's telling the truth. I've told you everything, all of it. It's all there. It is. But he also started to say, I'm not going to give it away, which meant he did something tricky, you know. But not a good person, not a good person at all. When I talked to Detective McLaughlin back in 2010, we were really on a roll, the two of us, and the detective, the FBI woman that was had worked with him on the case, like, she sent him something about a story, and he said, Emma, can you come here? And I said, yeah, okay, be right up. So I went over there, and he opened up his computer, and he said, I wanted you to see this. He said, you sent me the exact same story she sent me at the exact same time. She says, so we are onto something here. And that he had taken, I don't know if you saw it, he had taken what he actually, he knew Art Ream. He knew him well. He took him to see Scott's grave on the way back to prison after he was out there that day. He took him back to see Scott's grave one day. And he said, you know, Scott's got a grave. You know where he is. Don't you think Cindy's family should have the same thing? And that's when he told him where she was. That's when he gave that information. But then when he got out there, he chickened out because he knew exactly what it was. And he kept going, oh, no, it's over here. It's over here. And he had him digging all day. And finally, one of the guys was still out there. And he said, you know, Mac, all day you've been asking him if it's that spot right there. And he's saying, no, why don't you just dig it? And that's where they found her. Because on his map, he shows 25 feet from the bridge. And he was a carpet layer. And my dad did drywall. And my, back then, everything was, you didn't have all the gadgets and gizmos. My dad could walk into a room and look at it and figure out how many sheets of drywall he needed. I'm sure Art Ream could go out and go, is 25 feet from the bridge. So he could remember exactly where it was and in the three trees. So he knew right, you know, anytime he wanted to pay a visit, he knew right where she was. So, oh, and the I did get confirmation of that cologne thing because Irene's stepson was out there the one day trying to show him where he used to walk and where they hung out, the playing games and stuff out the field, get him a feel for it. And so when they found the three indentions, they told us to go have a seat and have a seat and have water on the FBI. Go away. So I went and sat under there and I was talking to him. And next thing I know, we're talking. And I told him, I said, yeah, I says, it was Scott. I said, I was in the car and I said, couldn't believe it. All of a sudden, this overwhelming smell of cologne in the car, like kids wore in school back then, like high karate or something. He went from just being kind of this demeanor, you know, just quiet. He just burst out laughing. He said, oh my God, everybody told Scotty wore way too much cologne. So I think it gave him peace of mind because he said, I knew Scott didn't kill Cindy. And I think the family seeing the map, and hopefully they saw the map, and going out there and digging and all that, I think it gave them some closure. Kimberly King's mother has accepted, yes, she's out there, you know. So at least they got some closure, even if the police didn't go find anybody. But they are out there. Maybe you can convince somebody, maybe someday somebody. If I was 20 years younger, I think I'd be out there with a shovel digging, but not now. I can't hardly walk out there.
Yeah.
So, any questions?
About how you got the information you have on all the girls.
Actually, I want to clarify something real quick. When you say like you feel them, do you mean like their presence, like energy, like inside, or just like around? Like, do you feel like, them?
Like I just like I'll get little tingles all over, or different feelings, different things. I believe it was Kelly Marie Brownlee. I believe had an orange blouse on. Like a peach colored blouse. And that morning I had been looking at her stuff and all. I went in the closet and I always have to debate. I went in the closet, I pulled out a peach colored blouse and I was laughing. I told Detective McLaughlin, I said, I just reached into the closet and pulled out a blouse, like, yeah, that's what I'm gonna wear. And then I sat down and I finished reading the article and said that she had a peach colored blouse when she went missing. And I'm like, oh, I guess she helped me pick up my wardrobe, you know. But it's a very, very subtle, very subtle. I'm not like I wouldn't do psychic readings because I'd question myself too much. But when I stop and I get still, and like I prayed to Saint Philomena, she was out there with me. I prayed to her. We had gone to Bridgeport or Bridgetown or something like that it's called, and they had a shrine to her. And I thought, I prayed to her to help me, and I felt her that day. But it's follow your gut.
Individually, or like, do you feel them all together, or do you feel an individual?
It was individual. When I was out there, when they were at the three trees, I should have been feeling ecstatically excited that they were going to find them. And I wasn't. That's how I knew it wasn't them. I felt like all this energy coming at me, just like shaking me, like make them listen. And I mean, I was crying. I was shaking. I was crying. I thought I was having a panic attack or a heart attack. And the police didn't notice it because they were all excited that they'd found these three indentions, you know? And so I don't recommend it unless God gives you the gift and you have to use it, because I mean, I went a lot of nights with no sleep. this isn't the only case. There were other cases, and I went nights without sleep. I saw you guys did a podcast like a year or so ago on the Skelton Boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were coming to me too, but nobody would listen. So it is what it is. Maybe, you know, little by little, eventually they'll start. I've talked to some psychics who said that they work with police, but they call them confident informants and don't tell people. So anyways, I don't know how much time you got left. You got any other?
We do have about a little under 10 minutes. But
that we could use, but I don't know.
Maybe we could ask one more.
Yeah.
Can we fit one more question in? You think 10 minutes is okay?
Sure.
Okay.
I know, I have a note here.
You're not. Oh.
Well,
it's all
that energy from 10 years of trying to get somebody to listen to.
Yeah, you got to tell somebody.
Yeah,
I feel good about this.
Yes,
you guys will live longer than me, so you got the information.
All right.
Okay, what's your question?
Yeah.
Okay. Can you talk about how you got the information you have on all the girls and what you know about them?
Detective McLaughlin gave me the map.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then I told him, like, Kelly Marie Brownlee and Kimberly King, I felt. And then when they went out to that, to the warehouse, that's when they came up with all the names. So I'm assuming they found evidence of those are the girls on the map, because it had KMB on his map under the tree. And I told detective, I says, I think that's Kimberly Marie Brownlee. And the other one said Kim, but it was a first name. And I went to a psychic who I told her Kimberly and Kelly. And then she goes, Kim and Kimberly. And I thought about it. I thought, oh, Kim. He put Kim. That covered both of them. So,
yeah.
But she was adamant that it's Kim and Kimberly. So that's how Kim LaRoe got in there.
Yeah. How did you know their names? Or did you hear all the other names from the police? Or did you
did those come to you? Do you think come to you? Can you
I had Kimberly King, Kelly Marie Brownlee, and I knew Cindy from what happened. And Nadine O'Dell was actually, how do I say it? Because he doesn't want it known. Was someone who knew someone who knew my son, because my son used to tell all the mom stories. So she'd heard about it, and she told him, hey, Jim's mom is working on that stuff. He's like me, too, not a psychic, but things come to him. Oh. And from another country, Nadine was coming to him.
Wow.
And he saw her, but he said she's closer to the bridge. She's not in the field. She's closer to the bridge. But with the water and everything washing away, she may not be there anymore. But he saw her, and he didn't know who she was. She had red hair and didn't know who she was until he went back to his country and somebody saw that thing in the paper and said, hey, is this where you made the wrong turn and ended up on that road and you said you saw that girl? And he looked at it and he said, oh, that's her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So there are other people out there, but if they don't listen, you know, in my next life, if I come back as a cop, by then they probably won't care.
Well, that's the goal for us. We're trying to get it out
trying,
there.
We're trying to make
get
people
the word
care.
Out.
Yeah, we're get, trying to make people
get
care.
The word out. Get the word out. They did not look at this map. It was just to them, just a map. If they would have looked at it, they would have seen all these pictures and all these things.
All the small details.
Mm-hmm.
All the
it took me a week.
They could have had a lot of details.
You would have
anything.
Been farther by now, I feel like.
Yeah, you would have gotten way much more into it.
Well, that carpet warehouse, we would have looked at that in 2010. Because in 2010, I sent a message to Detective McLaughlin, And I said, why are they showing me? I went on Google Maps and I said, why are they showing me this butcher boy meats? And he immediately said, oh, he says, that's because our Reams Carpet Warehouse was attached to Butcher Boy Meats. And that's where he found the box of jewelry. And I said, that's where we need to go. But then, like I said, his boss told him, drop it. So he retired. So the FBI found it in 2018, 8 years later. So, yeah. And it even would have been a lot sooner because Cindy's girlfriend told them she was meeting Art Ream for a surprise birthday party for Scott. Yeah. You know what they did? They said it wasn't Scott's birthday. So they blew it off. Yeah. Who better to know than somebody's best friend? And they blew it off. So it's been a whole mess of things. So hopefully you guys pay attention, look at little details, listen, look at body language, look at that video again and watch him when he says, I try not to lie, and he's holding that map in his hand, and see if you pick up on it. Mm-hmm. I think you guys are going to do good. I think you're going to do real good. Be open to things. And be open to psychics. There are people who aren't, but I'm not a psychic, but things come to me. A lot of things have come to me. The first time, if you got time, the first time I ever found a grave.
More minutes.
We got 5 minutes.
We have 5 minutes.
My cousin's grave. We were like sisters. She was in a car accident when she was 20, and I couldn't stand the thought to go there. So, and ironically, it was the Macomb County building I went to years before I actually worked there to find out where she was buried, to find old newspapers. And I went to the cemetery and I even went to the office and they gave me directions. I drove around for 20 minutes. So I couldn't find her. And I just started crying and I started to head towards the exit. I said, I'm sorry, cause I can't find you. I'm sorry. And I just was crying. And all of a sudden my car come to a dead stop. And I thought I'd hit the tree. Like, I'm away from the tree. My car would not start. It just sat there like spinning, not going anywhere. And all of a sudden I looked over and I go, oh my God, that's you over there, isn't it? And I got out of the car and I walked straight to the tombstone, went around to the front, and it was my cousin Eileen.
Oh, wow.
That was the first time that I knew that I could
do
that.
You had a little gift, a little something.
Little gift, but I want to share with the world, but the world wasn't ready, so
their loss.
Yeah, never asked, don't want money, didn't ask for a dime, didn't want, in fact, I wanted it quiet because one of the things is if the bad guys find out you know these things, like Art Ream, when he said, well, why don't you go talk to that woman? Well, if he'd have gotten out of jail, he might have been looking for me, you
know? Yeah.
That's happened in a couple cases. I think I was saved by the bell by having to get out of Michigan and move to Wisconsin. So it can be dangerous. And I've had psychics tell me that too, because the police don't believe you, but the person who did the crime knows better. So be safe. I hope you didn't talk to any other relatives of Art Ream, except maybe the stepson, but
we haven't talked to any of his
name. Yeah, we haven't spoken to any of his family at all.
I'd be a little nervous to speak to his
family. Yeah,
because I was told one of them was kind of going down the same path. So
yeah, we haven't even found anything to contact him with. I don't know.
He said they had changed their names or something, changing their identities and stuff. But
I would.
So
I
just
definitely would.
So just be careful. Just be careful.
Yeah. Yes.
Good luck with it. Let me know how it goes.
Yeah, I'll do.
If anything else comes to you, like recent, if you want to share it.
Spiritually, yeah, just reach out to Emery.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We'll do.
And that wraps up our interview with Emma. The four of us working on this case feel extremely grateful to be able to reach out to other individuals. Being able to talk to all kinds of people from different families, backgrounds, and different lines of work. That being said, we felt a great honor talking to Emma. It's not just interesting, but also important to the case. It's always important to get another individual's view of something, especially when they have experienced it themselves. While we're on the topic of speaking to new people, the next episode will be with a police officer who worked directly on the case involving Arthur Ream. where he will help us better understand what's happening as we dive deeper into this unsolved case. Underestimated. Michigan Missing Angels was researched, written, and produced by Brendan, Tegan, McKenna, and Emery. Intro music by Haley. All other music by Shane Yoder. Our show artwork was created by Chelsea, and our series artwork was created by Tegan. The Underestimated podcast is a production created in the Brandywine Community School's Broadcasting CTE program. We want to thank you for listening, and a huge thank you to our community sponsors for supporting us and helping us fund our work. Please make sure to leave us a review on your favorite podcast player, and we'll be back next week with another episode of Underestimated.